on FM, online, and on TuneIn 24/7. This is 88.3 Southern FM.
And welcome to episode 9 of our Planet Earth series. Now, these programs are a mix of factual reports and sometimes poetry and music, and all of them about our home planet.
Earth below us, drifting, falling, floating, weightless, calling, calling home.
And one of the reasons to pop over to New Zealand is to catch up on an exciting adventure, which is being done in cooperation with the United States, and that's MethaneSat. And we're going to be telling you about that for the rest of this evening's The Space Show. Now, Dave Borlase is the host of Just to Think podcast in the United Kingdom. And he has this little explanation of why atmospheric methane is a problem.
You may have heard recently that atmospheric levels of methane seem to be increasing far more rapidly than scientists were predicting. You've probably heard about the rapid warming in the Arctic and the thawing of permafrost that's releasing ancient methane from the land. You may know about the bubbling up of methane hydrates from the shallow waters of the East Siberian ice shelf, caused by the same dramatic increase in Arctic temperatures. And of course, we all know about the belching cows in global scale meat production, contributing to the estimated 2 billion tonnes of CO2 equivalent spewed out as methane by all the ruminants on the planet. But what we hear much less about is the methane that's leaking from oil and gas production all over the world. Over a 20-year time frame, methane traps 86 times as much heat in the atmosphere as carbon dioxide. It's responsible for about a quarter of total atmospheric warming to date. And while a steady increase in atmospheric carbon dioxide and nitrous oxide are pretty catastrophic, they are at least conforming to scientists' expectations. Methane is not conforming to scientists' expectations. Its levels are rising far faster than they should be, and everyone, including the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, is getting into a bit of a kerfuffle as we try to work out exactly what's going on. Essentially, methane is starting to show itself as the wild card in our ongoing game of chance against our own climate. Back at the start of the Industrial Revolution, our atmosphere contained about 700 molecules of methane for every 1 billion molecules of air, usually expressed as parts per billion, or ppb. As a result of increasing industrialisation and burning of coal, oil and gas, combined with population growth, increases in average levels of income, and the corresponding huge expansion of the global meat industry, by the start of this century, those methane levels had gone from 700 parts per billion to 1775 parts per billion. That's a pretty dramatic increase. But then, at the start of the 21st century, something happened that could very nearly be described as encouraging. Methane levels actually started to level off, suggesting a correlation with the new digital technology age, which was by then allowing much better analysis and control systems in fossil fuel extraction and in industrial processes, combined with the long overdue commercialisation and financial competitiveness of wind and solar, as well as a handful of other renewable technologies. How hopeful we all were in those heady days back at the start of the century. Had a new dawn broken? Had our energy providers finally experienced the epiphany we all so hoped they might? Had Rex Tillerson arranged for solar panels to be fitted on the roof of his $4 million mansion? No. In 2007, this happened. In the 12 years between then and now, methane levels in our atmosphere have increased by as much as they did in the preceding 35 years. So what on earth happened in 2007? Well, one thing that happened was that the price of a barrel of oil nudged the $100 barrier for the first time in history, before sailing straight through that barrier and on up to an all-time high of about $136 a barrel just before the worst economic meltdown in the history of civilization in 2008. At the same time, as this Guardian report tells us, Some other American entrepreneurs, having predicted the impending demise of the oil industry, had figured out how to literally force open rocks that were often more than a mile under the surface of the earth to produce gas and then oil. Most notably among these gold diggers was the infamous Aubrey McClendon, the founder of Chesapeake Energy, who died in a mysterious high-speed head-on car crash into a concrete viaduct just one day after a federal grand jury had indicted him for violating antitrust laws during his time as Chesapeake CEO. Anyway, back to the point. The rocks, called shale, source rock or tight rock, and once thought to be completely impermeable, were opened by combining two technologies: horizontal drilling, in which the drill bit can travel more than 2 miles horizontally, and hydraulic fracturing, in which fluid is pumped into the earth at a high enough pressure to crack open hydrocarbon-bearing rocks, while a so-called proppant, usually sand, holds the rocks open a sliver of an inch so that the hydrocarbons can flow. And these technologies brought about what we now slightly glibly call the fracking boom. It was clearly a very small-scale industry during the first few years of this century, and then suddenly it explodes upwards as we approach the current year. Now, you might tell me that this is correlation and not necessarily causation, and that it's the oldest schoolboy error in the scientific book to confuse the two. And you might be right. But this report in the National Geographic from August 2019 points out another interesting correlation. It starts by explaining that previous studies show that shale gas generally has less carbon-13 relative to carbon-12 than methane from conventional natural gas or other fossil fuels like coal. I won't go into the exact difference between carbon-13 and carbon-12. Suffice to say that they determine the weight of the carbon atom at the centre of the methane molecule. A study authored by Robert Howarth, an ecologist at Cornell University, and published in the journal Biogeosciences, took previous data on the chemical composition of methane in the atmosphere and applied a series of equations to see how much of this lighter form of methane could be attributed to shale gas. It turned out that the lighter form of methane released during fracking is a substantial component of the overall methane rise since 2008. Howarth does acknowledge that the chemical fingerprint of shale gas can vary depending on the locale and how the chemical analysis is done. Nevertheless, he does suggest that while the study isn't a smoking gun, it has found a link between rapid methane increases in the atmosphere and the massive rise in shale gas production. It's fuzzy, he says, but the fingerprint is there.
With that backgrounder by Dave Borless, we now know how important it is to monitor methane emissions. In 2018 April, Fred Krupp, who is president of the Environmental Defense Fund in New York, made this announcement. And he was speaking at a TED event.
We've got a big problem on our hands with global warming. A lot of you, a lot of people have been watching the floods, the droughts, the storms, the fires. When I leave this stage today, I don't want you to have hope. I want you to have certainty, real certainty, that we can make a dent in this problem and live to see it. I want to give you a vision of what that would look like. This is the first time we've shared this publicly. You're the first audience to hear it. We are going to launch a rocket. And on that rocket will be a satellite. And that satellite will collect data about pollution that is warming the planet. We'll put that data in the hands of people who can make simple fixes that will change the course of global warming in our lifetime. That's a lot to take in. Maybe I should back up. First, let me introduce myself. I'm Fred. I've been an environmentalist since I was a kid. When I watched the fish and the frogs in my neighborhood pond die from a chemical spill, that bothered me. later, a professor, inspired me to think about environmentalism differently. How the best solutions come from answering people's aspirations for prosperity, things like being safe and healthy and thriving in this world. So I joined the Environmental Defense Fund to build those kind of solutions. And I've worked my whole career for a moment like this. The moment when we can stop fighting headwinds and start to have the wind at our backs. Because of the power of information, information from technology that is coming down in price and going up in precision. You see, there's something about climate change that we didn't grasp just a decade ago. The world was so focused on carbon dioxide that we overlooked another important gas. We didn't appreciate methane. Methane pollution causes one quarter of the global warming that we're experiencing right now. Pound for pound, its immediate impact is far greater than carbon dioxide, 84 times greater over a 20-year period. One of the largest sources of methane pollution is the oil and gas industry, but that's not obvious because methane is invisible. Let's take a look at this natural gas storage facility outside of Los Angeles. Can you see the methane? Neither can I. How about now? We shot this using an infrared camera at the same spot, exposing one of the worst methane leaks in the history of the United States. That's a very different picture. It turns out that natural gas is displacing our dependence on coal, which emits far more carbon dioxide. But natural gas is mostly methane. So as it's produced and processed and transported to homes and businesses across America, it escapes from wells and pipes and other equipment. It gets up into the sky and contributes to the disasters that we're now experiencing. That does not have to happen. But nobody had paid much attention to it until we launched a nationwide study to understand the problem. We used drones, planes, helicopters, even Google Street View cars. It turns out there's far more of this methane pollution than what the government is reporting. It also turns out that when we find where the gas is being vented and leaked, most of those sources can be fixed easily and inexpensively, saving the gas that would have otherwise been wasted. And finally, we learned that when you put information like that into people's hands, they act. Leading companies replaced valves and tightened loose-fitting pipes. Colorado became the first state in the nation to limit methane pollution. California followed suit, and the public joined in. Tweets started flying, hashtag cut methane. And everybody's paying more attention now. We're doing this because we can't wait for Washington, especially not now. In fact, we have to take what we've done so far and go higher to the sky. The United States represents about 10% of this pollution. To find the rest, we have to go global. Remember that rocket I mentioned? It will launch a compact satellite called MethaneSat to do what no one has been able to do until now. Measure methane pollution from oil and gas facilities worldwide with exacting precision. Its data stream will allow us to map that pollution so that everyone can see it. And then it's all about turning data into action, just as we did in the United States. We've seen that when we present companies with data, many of them will cut the pollution. Citizens will be empowered to take action. Governments will tighten the regulations. And because all of our data will be free and public, there'll be transparency. We'll all be able to see how much progress is being made and where. Which brings me to our goal, to cut this methane pollution by 45% by 2025. That will have the same near-term impact as shutting down 1,300 coal-fired power plants. That's one-third of all the coal-fired power plants in the world. Nothing else can have this sort of near-term impact at such a low cost. The fact that a single satellite can help us put the brakes on global warming is truly remarkable. This is our chance to create change in our lifetimes, and we can do it now. Thanks to the generous giving of the Audacious Project, we are on a path toward liftoff. But my time is running short, and I promised you a vision of what a critical piece of the solution would look like. Can you see it? Can you see how this satellite leverages the best of science and data and technology? Can you see we're entering a whole new era of innovation that is supercharging progress? Can you see that it's in our hands? We've set an aggressive goal of 3 years till liftoff. And when that satellite is ready, we'll have a launch party. A literal launch party. So imagine a blue sky day, crowds of people, television cameras, kids staring up toward the sky at a thing that will change their future. What an amazing day that will be. What a big opportunity we have. I can't wait. Thank you.
That was Fred Krupp, the president of the Environmental Defense Fund. The Defense Fund is based in New York, but he lives in Connecticut. Well, we'll hear later in the show how New Zealand has taken up the baton on this project. But I understand that Nick Black is back there in Melbourne, and he's got some messages queued up for us. Take it away, Nick.
You're listening to 88.3 Southern FM.
This is planet Earth. You're looking at planet Earth. Bop, 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 bop. This is planet Earth.
And now we go back to Dave Borlase, and he compares the methane sat with another satellite that is doing environmental studies.
So while the dogged and determined climate scientists like Natalia Shikova and Professor Peter Wadhams are quite rightly highlighting the potential risks of a massive methane release from the East Siberian ice shelf, and other campaigners are focusing the spotlight more and more acutely on the truly profligate activities of the global meat industry, these guys have been turning to cutting-edge technology to try to establish the true extent of methane leakage, known as fugitive emissions, from the shale gas boom, and in particular, from the fracking industry. There are two major players in this new field, GHGSat and MethaneSat, and for all my friends watching in the United States of America, it's methane. It just is. MethaneSat is due for launch in 2022, with the objective of measuring methane emissions from shale plays which can span thousands of square kilometres. Sophisticated sensors on the satellite will pick up the sun's reflected infrared radiation as it passes through the atmosphere and analyse them to reveal methane's unique fingerprint. A series of intelligent algorithms will sort through the data, factoring in the influence of clouds, tiny particles of air pollution, and reflectivity of the ground cover to calculate even the smallest changes in methane emission rates. And it can measure other sources of human-caused methane emissions too, and it'll make the results publicly available for anyone, free of charge. GHGSat is slightly ahead of the game, having already launched its demonstration satellite back in 2016. Two further satellites with even more sophisticated equipment on board are due to go operational this year. These commercial satellites are designed to measure individual facilities. To achieve this, the resolution of their imagery is extremely accurate, with each pixel covering an area of less than 50 square meters compared to the 1 square kilometer of the methane sat imagery. In practice, it's hoped that the two systems will be complementary rather than competitive. So if MethaneSat sees a few pixels of high methane content in its wide sweep of the planet, GHGSat will be able to point its satellites towards that geographic location to determine exactly which facility is leaking methane. Working in conjunction with each other in this way, MethaneSat will be able to tell all the operators in a region what their aggregate emissions are so that their governmental jurisdictions can assess overall performance, while GHGSat will provide individual operators with direct measurements of emissions from their facilities. And GHGSat are also developing an artificial intelligence package to predict facility-level risks of methane emissions using all available data, including the information gleaned from MethaneSat. Of course, as you might expect me to say, there is also another really good way to avoid these methane fugitive emissions, and that is to stop the extraction of fossil fuels completely and just leave the bloody ground alone. But in the meantime, while we're all impatiently waiting for that day to come, the companies that insist on continuing to operate in this increasingly unjustifiable arena are coming under greater and greater levels of scrutiny, the like of which they could not possibly have dreamt of in their worst nightmares only a couple of decades ago. If I was an oil or gas engineer today, I would be thinking very seriously about getting myself retrained into the renewable energy industry. If I was a lawmaker today, I'd be pushing very hard to enact legislation to subsidise that retraining and prioritise it as a matter of urgency for skilled trades coming out of the fossil fuel industry and into renewables. And if I was the boss of a fossil fuel producer today, I would be instructing my board to immediately halt all further exploration and onward investment in new oil and gas fields and plough that R&D money squarely into getting a foothold in the renewable technology sector. Because even a hard-headed businessman must surely now be able to see that that's where the profits lie as we move deeper and deeper into the 21st century.
That was Dave Borlase of the Just Have a Think podcast. You want to check it out sometime? It's pretty good. Well, let's have a look now at a feature from MethaneSat itself, the people that are putting up the satellite.
Every day, nearly 5,000 satellites orbit the Earth. Satellites are making possible groundbreaking advances in almost every industry. Some are used to predict the weather, others help us communicate. The latest frontier is the fight to stop climate change. MethaneSat is a unique satellite on a unique mission: to reduce emissions of methane, a potent greenhouse gas. Human-made methane emissions are responsible for more than a quarter of the warming we are experiencing today. One of the biggest sources is the oil and gas industry, which releases at least 75 million metric tons of methane each year from wells, pipelines, and other equipment. When it launches, MethaneSat will locate and measure these emissions and identify their source. This will give companies and countries the unprecedented ability to fix problems quickly. Existing satellites can map methane emissions across large areas or measure them at set targets. MethaneSat will do both, with precision and at a scale never before achieved. MethaneSat will set a new bar for transparency and accountability by making the data available to anyone free of charge. Cutting methane emissions 45% by the year 2025 from the oil and gas industry alone will have the same 20-year climate benefit as shutting down one-third of the world's coal-fired power plants. With the help of MethaneSat, we can slow the rate of global warming and limit temperature increases sooner than we ever thought possible.
And now on the Space Show, we return to Fred Krupp. And in this occasion, he's talking with CERAWeek.
You know, Fred, there's going to be a way. It's never been done before, but there is going to be a way from low Earth orbit to launch a satellite that could look at all the major oil and gas facilities around the world more than once a week and measure for methane pollution. And I was pretty enthusiastic about learning more, and ultimately we've hired a fellow named Tom Ingersoll, who was the CEO of two satellite companies, sold the last one for $500 million. He really knows what he's doing, and we are.
Are you still looking for a job?
He's been working for us and is developing the satellite, and we're on a schedule to be able to launch this instrument and make the data available to the world for free by the end of 2021. So it's a $65 million project, and it's an ambitious undertaking, but when we think about, you know, all the 13 majors put together, even in the United States, produce only 20 or 30% of the gas or oil, depending on which you're looking at. So we've got the whole industry we need to, you know, bring
so,
up.
So what will you be capturing?
We'll be imaging swaths that are, 150 miles wide, and as long as we want to go, we'll capture the methane flux rate. We'll be measuring the methane flux rate from these facilities. And we'll have a pixel size of just a few hundred meters by a few hundred meters, and we'll be doing it to a precision of 2 parts per billion, which is a much finer precision and smaller pixel size than any of the methane detecting satellites up there or planned. So it'll be an incredibly powerful instrument that I think is important. President Reagan, talking about a different subject, nuclear arms control, said, "Trust, but verify," and I think that's going to serve the world well, and frankly, I think it's going to serve the reputation of the fuel well as companies clean up and are seen to be cleaning up.
New Zealand is a agricultural country. Looking out the window here, it's a bit dark now. It's getting on near 10 o'clock at night, but there's sheep outside, and yeah, I can... as I was coming in, I could hear a few cows mooing, and they produce a lot of methane. So New Zealand has a great interest in meeting its greenhouse gas emissions target, and one way is to assist with this methane satellite. And Fred Krupp, with the Environmental Defence Fund, made an agreement with the New Zealand government to host the control centre for methane SAT. So here's Fred congratulating New Zealand for its participation.
Hello and greetings from Methane SAT and the Environmental Defence Fund. If ever there was a day that I wished I could be there with you in person, today's it. But for better or worse, I'm back here in the United States. I want to thank Minister Woods, Dr. Mikuláš Fletcher, and the team at Rocket Labs for joining in the methane SAT mission. And I'd especially like to thank the government of New Zealand and MBIE for their early investment in this critical project. New Zealand has been an early and essential partner with methane SAT, bringing valuable scientific and technical capabilities to the project. You have enabled us to integrate agricultural emissions into the mission. We are thrilled to be the partners with Rocket Lab and to welcome the Tai Punahaha Aria Auckland Space Institute as hosts and operators for our Mission Control Center. This is a critical function for our mission and a vital part of our collaboration. The ability to locate these operations in a major research university is also an opportunity to help train students in the application and use of these tools. At least 25% of today's warming is driven by methane from human actions. One of the largest methane sources is the oil and gas industry. Livestock production is a critically important source as well. Cutting these emissions is the single fastest thing that we can do to slow the rate of global warming right now, even as we continue to decarbonize our energy systems. Methane SAT was designed to unlock that opportunity, not just through more and better data, but by making that data freely available for stakeholders and the public to compare companies and country progress. Methane SAT will continuously detect, map, and quantify emissions worldwide, measuring changes in concentrations as low as 2 or 3 parts per billion. The ability to track change in emission rates is essential for measuring progress against commitments by companies as well as countries. It is key to accountability. The need for this mission is urgent, the opportunity is enormous, and together, with our colleagues and collaborators in New Zealand, we are excited to be taking on this important challenge. Thank you.
That's Fred Krupp, the president of the Environmental Defence Fund. And yes, we have more about New Zealand's involvement in this project and the Rocket Lab Control Centre on next week's The Space Show, because we'll still be in New Zealand.